Hey, everyone, and welcome to the Matt Talks Wine and Stuff with Interesting People podcast. My interview today is with winemaker and owner Frederick Laveau. His new wine from Domaine Le Dessel is a fantastic reserve Côte de Rhône Village. And a couple things here. My French, wow, does it get bad. I know you hear this each and every week when I do a podcast and I talk about how lousy my ability to speak really any language, including English. Well, this one, I again do not disappoint. And another reminder that if you want to get into wine, maybe take French longer than I did. I did grade 9 general French. And then I dropped out in high school. And I remember the first day of grade 9 French, the teacher walks in and she's just speaking French. And I knew I was doomed because my education grade 6, 7, and 8 was lousy. I didn't have the best teachers, but a lot of it is on me as well. So if you want to have a fun drinking game, the grapes where the wine that we're going to talk about is sourced from is Domaine Le Dessel. And I pronounce it Dessel, Dessel. I don't know what the hell I did, but it's even for me, it's pretty bad. This is a fun interview. Frederick, actually, it's funny. He studied in Ottawa, and he talked about how drinking with his friends in super cold Ottawa in the mid-1990s really helped to inspire him. So I think you'll like that. A lot of cool stories from him. Just a really good, personable guy. And as I've talked about a couple times, with these wines and also wines that I have tried from a variety of other consignment companies, Côte de Rhône, and especially if you go one level higher, Côte de Rhône Village level, which is usually still under $20, you are going to get just a great bang for your buck. If you're looking for that good, and I don't even say good barbecue wine, because sometimes when someone says, oh, it's a great wine with barbecue, or it's a great pizza wine, that's sometimes code for, it's not that great, but hey, you're having barbecue, you're having pizza, you're not going to worry about it. This is a wine that we talk about that has plenty of depth, and it's $17. It's crazy. So right now, my two favorite regions for value and quality is Chianti, Tuscany, like Chianti Classico even, and Côte de Rhône. You can find plenty of stuff for like $15 to $20. This interview was done about a month and a half ago. It's been, feels like forever. Today is July 23rd. Sports are actually going to start up again. For people that are doing wine tourism and wine tastings, at least in Ontario, more and more places are open. I was in Prince Edward County last weekend and just had a crazy time. So I want to give a shout out to some of the winemakers that I've featured on this podcast before. I went to three of them. I went back and saw Keith Tyers from Kloss & Chase and James from Long Dog and some of the Sullivan family from Rose Hall Run. And all of them could not have been nicer. And I always recommend, if you get a chance to do a barrel tasting, check it out. It really does help you figure out a little bit more about where wine comes from, the aging process, what oak really means to a wine or when oak is not used. It's a great way to learn about wine. It's fun. And as I always say, when you try wine that you really like from a barrel, it's like watching a movie preview. You know, like, oh, this is good. Oh, I can't wait for the movie to come out. Or like, oh, this is good. I can't wait for this vintage to be released. So again, I hope everyone is as good as you can be in the middle of this pandemic, as safe as you can be, as healthy. And I hope, as you know, that you're working or prosperous or whatever. And I know for a lot of people, it's so difficult right now. And so even spending $17 on a bottle of wine might seem like a lot. So if it is, I would suggest a bottle like this, buy it, throw it away for a special occasion. This wine is certainly deserving. It's versatile. You could decant it and enjoy it for a special night, or just open it on a Friday and enjoy, because it's a really good wine. But anyway, I'll talk about that more. And yeah, so without further ado, here is my interview from the Côte de Rhône. It is Frederick Laveau.
The title is clunky, but the wine talk is smooth. You're listening to the Matt Talks Wine and Stuff with Interesting People podcast.
Hey, everyone, and welcome to the Matt Talks Wine and Stuff with Interesting People podcast. And today, from the Laveau Chateau, I am joined by Frederick Laveau. Frederick, thank you so much for joining the podcast today.
Good morning, everybody.
And I see you have a bottle of the Le Dessel, your Côte de Rhône Village wine, which we are going to talk about. It is available at the LCBO.
It is ridiculous at $17, the value you're going to get. And I'll just say this, Frederick. I haven't been in the wine store here since February because of coronavirus. I've been supporting a lot of local wineries. But your wine is one where will probably get me to go into the LCBO to buy it, because that is a great value.
I'm very happy that you know they have selected my wine. I've been working with my agent for quite some time now to be able to show and have this La Decelle, you know, red Codrol village coming from the small village of Valréas, maybe 10 or 15 miles away from the winery. And it's true that, you know, it's great wine and giving great value because it's being sold at $17 a bottle.
Yeah, it's ridiculous. And I've said this on my podcast many times in my introductions. I'm given wine every now and then by either wineries or, you know, PR companies. And my rule is, if I don't like the wine, I don't go on my podcast and say bad things, but I just don't talk about it. If I ever talk about a wine on this podcast, it means that wine brought me joy and I want the listeners to try it because I think that it would bring them joy.
Okay, that's really good. You know, I'm very happy to hear that.
So we'll get more into this wine and the land where it's from and you and your brother and what was it about the terroir that you love. But I want to go back a little bit because it is a pretty crazy story. I was wondering if you could tell the listeners a little bit about the story of your great-grandfather, René, and his journey.
Yeah, René Lavaux was born, you know, around 1850, I guess. I don't know exactly. But he was living in Saint-Émilion in Bordeaux at that time. So it was, you know, I would say close to 1900 because he decided to move and visit the New World. So he must have been around 1870, something like that. And so he got on a boat and he left directly to go to North Africa. That was at that time the New World. And he ended up in Tunisia, where he had bought a small estate where he was producing at first, you know, oranges and a little bit of vine. That's how this whole journey started at that time. And of course, after my grandfather was born in 1899 and he stayed there until 1962, time where, you know, Tunisia became, you know, independent country after, you know, the war. And my mom and dad, who were both born there, decided to move back to France, I guess. And they had been asking, you know, where maybe they could go and, you know, to keep the wine business going at that time, because that's pretty much the only thing they had done in their lives. And they decided to move to Southern Rhone, which was, you know, the region that was, you know, going up in the world of wine.
Yeah, it's. I mean, geographically, it's such a long journey. You know, it's something you brought up, Frederick, is that, and it's something I've never really discussed, is Northern Africa, like that area there. There's a lot of like very well. I mean, not as well known in North America, but that area makes some very, very good wines. I don't know how much you've drank or from that area, but it's certainly one that I'd love to explore.
My mom and dad are retired now because they, you know, left the company to retire on January 1st, 2000. Mm-hmm. And they decided that, you know, they were born in Tunisia. So they spent the 31st years of their lives in Tunisia. And after they moved back to France from, you know, 30 years old to 60. And then when they retired in 2000, they decided to go back. So now they're still living there. And so from time to time, I go, you know, with the family, we go and to visit them. And so I drink quite a different type of wine from Tunisia. And it's true that, you know, it has always been a country where they have been producing, you know, wine, and they still do. A lot of people have, you know, built their own wineries. And for that reason, they make some, you know, quite, it's good. It's good. white wine and red wine. And it's very interesting because it is a little bit drier than Southern Rhone. But it's like a desert pretty much.
Yeah.
So it's really, yeah, it's really dry during, you know, spring and summer. And it's kind of raining, you know, from, let's say, October, the end of October to maybe January or February. So, you know, the weather conditions are quite good. And they also have some interesting soils. So you find some really, you know, decent wine.
Yeah, it's something I'd like to try at some point. You mentioned about your parents retiring in 2000. I was wondering if we could go back there. What was that like when you and your brother Benoit, when you guys took over the winery? Just, you know, was it exciting? Was it scary? You know, just now you guys are in charge. I was wondering, what was that like?
To be perfectly honest, when we were kids with my brother, the best time of the year to go, because the house was really next to the winery, was during harvest time, because some growers were bringing the fruit to the winery. So it was quite exciting because there was a lot of energy going around there at that time of the year, September and October usually. And but we never really thought about working in wine in general, and even never thought either about working with our mom and dad. So it's really maybe around 1995 when I finished university, when I finished college, that my dad and my mom told my brother and I that now maybe because I was going to start, working, that maybe it was time for me to come back to the winery, even if I had never thought about it. And we had never even shared a glass of wine, at the table when we were, kids or teenagers or young adults even. It may sound surprising, but
yeah,
our mom and dad were really, really were spending their whole day together, at the winery, at the office, and at the house. But it's true that we never had any kind of, glass of wine or white wine or anything at that time. So it was quite a surprise for my brother and I to get this opportunity, which we never thought about before. And, it took me a long time because I was living abroad. I was, studying in Canada. And I also studied, in LA in the US. And I really, when I left the house, I was 18 years old, and now I've been gone for almost 5 years. And I thought I was going to spend pretty much my whole life, elsewhere, not in France anymore. It took me quite some time to convince myself that it would be a great opportunity to go back to the winery. But what really convinced me is the fact that one day my dad saw me really, didn't know exactly what to do. And he just told me, maybe you should consider the fact that it would be better to work for yourself than for someone else.
Right.
And that's really what got me, what got my decision made.
Was there a bottle of wine? Was there a... Because you were saying that wine wasn't a big part, drinking it as a teenager with your family, and you were away for a lot of those years after you became a teenager, like in your 20s. Do you remember, was there one bottle of wine that you really fell in love with when you're like, wow, the power of this is really, just convincing me I need to go into this?
I would say it's not really a bottle of wine. It's more like a moment of wine with friends at that time. Because I have a friend of mine, he was a student with me at the University of Ottawa. Mm-hmm. And, once a month, we're three or four friends, getting together on a Friday. And one was in charge of buying cheese, the other was in charge of buying wine, and the last one was usually in charge of buying bread. So we would go around the shops and buy, all these items. And after going back, all together in a house, we would just spend all afternoon, eating and drinking wine and eating cheese with bread and talking and about, anything, everything. So that's more of a vivid moment of a moment of happiness and, you know, and food pairing and, you know, and cheese and friends.
Yeah, that makes total sense. I imagine though in Ottawa in the mid-90s, it wasn't a great wine scene. It's a lot better now. I've been to so many great wine bars and restaurants in Ottawa in the last couple of years, but in the mid-90s, I imagine it didn't resemble southern France.
That's true. That's, you know, one of the, I would say, bad memories that I have about, you know, Ottawa and about Canada. Is the fact that it was really cold, of course, because in France, we, you know, it feels like spring, at least. I wouldn't say summer, but it feels like springs pretty much, you know, all year long. And when I was living in Canada, I remember times, you know, when we were getting to February now, the winter was feeling quite long, sitting in front of a very large window in the house I was living in, and again, you know, some kind of sun from, let's say, 9:30, 10 a.m. in the morning until 11, just to get some, you know, energy and some heat, because it was just so cold, you know, the hat and the gloves and everything. Everybody is used to that, you know, in Canada, of course, because you have to protect yourself against the cold. But I can tell you, that's part of my bad memories about, you know, Ottawa. And in terms of wine at that time, I guess the only wine we're able to find that I had tasted at that time already was, you know, ice wine.
Right. Of course. Yeah. It's.
And so that's why I am familiar with Vidal, you know, varietal.
Yeah. It's not the best varietal. I prefer Cab Franc or even Riesling for my ice wine. I mean, but Canada now versus then, I mean, you know, Prince Edward County, which isn't, you know, not a couple hours from Ottawa, makes great Pinot and Chardonnay, and you know, you can get some wonderful Syrahs and Niagara. I mean, where Ontario is today versus when you were studying in the mid-90s in Ottawa, it's come a long way.
Oh, yeah, I bet. I didn't truly have the chance, you know, to taste all of these wines, but I have heard from people still living in Canada that I have kept contact with, that you know, the wine scene is quite interesting.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. It's so much different. So let's. I want to hear about the vineyard. What was it about the main? Is it Decelle or Decelle? How do I pronounce it?
La Decelle. We pronounce it La Decelle.
La Decelle. What was it about the terroir that made you and your brother fall in love and purchase this estate? I think about a decade ago.
Yes, exactly. That was 2010. You know, the winery that, you know, we took over with my brother in 2000 was very much into, you know, buying fruit from growers,
right?
You know, in Southern Rhone. And for 10 to 15 years, I would say that we were making the wine, but after we were bulk selling the wine. And it was in 2009. Because we had been doing kind of the same thing for now, you know, a long time. And we want to, you know, instead of just selling the wine that we were producing to other wholesalers, we really wanted to put some wine in bottles. So that's how we got into, you know, bottling wine, I would say, under the Lavo brand that you can find also at the LCBO. So if you look for it, you will find some Lavo wines there. In 2010, that was the first time also that we are able to buy land, and that's how we ended up in Valréas. It's you know, we went there. We were familiar with the town or the village of Valréas, but not really with, you know, any special aspects of the terroir itself. But when we get to La Decelle vineyard, we thought it was very interesting because Valréas is a little bit north from, you know, the foothill of Gigondas, where we have the winery today,
yep.
Around 15, 20 miles away. So it means that the cooler temperature during the day and the night, because, you know, we have also the famous Mistral that is always blowing there. So that is really, you know, interesting to keep the vine away from disease. And a little bit higher in altitude than usual, I was, you know, visiting the vineyard yesterday, and also brought my phone, and my phone told me, because, you know, everybody talks to his phone now. So I asked my phone what was the altitude, and it was 380 meters. So it's, you know, a little bit higher than usual, I would say. And mostly clay, so very interesting for the soil, because it means that it's a rich soil. And for all of these reasons, we thought it was a great opportunity to buy, you know, these 25 hectares of vineyard made of 50% Grenache and 50% Syrah. We also have a little bit of white varietals like Viognier and Marsanne, but it's not, you know, the major wine that we produce there is red wine.
That must have been exciting, going that transition from buying your grapes from growers to now growing your own grapes, having that control. That must have been exciting.
It is very exciting because you are in charge of the whole process,
yeah,
from the beginning, you know, to the end. So that's very interesting. And because we wanted to do you know, a great job, you know, we put a lot of passion into it. And you know, it takes what's really difficult in our business is the fact that, you know, we only have one chance to do things right, because harvest only happens in September. So if you don't do it right, or if you wanted to do it in a different way, you have 12 months to wait until you'll get another chance. And for that reason, it's always very challenging. Of course, with experience, I would say, or age, it is, you know, something different. But it was, I would say, easy from the beginning, because, you know, in the vineyard of La Decelle, everything was, you know, well set up, and all the qualities that you want to find in the vineyard were there. So it was, you know, it was quite easy from the beginning.
What's the most nervous you've ever been for harvest? Like, what vintage, was there a vintage you were most nervous about?
I would say that 2014 was challenging. Because it started raining around, you know, I don't remember exactly, but it was around August 10, between the 10th and the 15th. So we were something like maybe 3 to 4 weeks away from harvest. And we don't like it so much when, you know, the summer gets wet. Because after, you know, you get the disease and you get, you know, into the vineyard and also into the fruit. I remember that I wanted to, I went there at that time, and I, you know, we went with a lot of people just to take some of the leaves, you know, away from the vine. So this way it will, you know, improve ventilation to get, you know, Mistral blowing and going through the vines. And that's really one of the best way to get the fruit dry.
Yeah, and
so
for people,
2014 was challenging for them.
Yeah, and the funny thing is before, when you bought the grapes, you didn't have that same level of stress. But then on the flip side, it's not 100% your wine. I imagine you're okay with the stress because you also have full control.
Exactly. But that's really what's interesting when you own a vineyard like Domaine La Decelle, and we are lucky also to own three other vineyards also in Southern Rhône. And it's true that for us it was, you know, La Decelle was an easy start, you know,
right,
to be in charge of the whole process. So that was really cool.
Where are the other vineyards? What are the locations of your other vineyards?
So in 2010, we bought La Decelle vineyard in the village of Valréas. And 2012, we bought Domaine de Carmignan. It's in the Gard region, so maybe 25 miles away here. It's on the right bank of the Rhône River. Mm-hmm. And 2013, we were able to merge with another family from Châteauneuf-du-Pape, and now Lavaux Group buys, also own, sorry, you know, Chateau Maupoil in Châteauneuf-du-Pape, yep. Organically driven since 2009. So where we produce, you know, Côte d'Anglage in Châteauneuf-du-Pape. And the latest one was in Rasto Domaine des Evignon, really nice, you know, beautiful land. Rasto, people may not be familiar with that, but Rasto is a great appellation. It makes some amazing wine.
And that sort of goes to where I want to go to next, which is just use you, Frederick, as a little bit of a Southern Rhone wine instructor. If someone is at the LCBO and they see Rasto and they see Gigaudas or Vaccarat or Châteauneuf-du-Pape or even Côte de Rhone, like, what would you say is one or two characteristics that differentiates from all of these very well-known regions, but people might not know just what the style differences could be?
I would say it's really a question of concentration, I would say, because the Côte du Rhône will be the larger part of, you know, Southern Rhône. Most of the time, it's more like flat land, you know, like valley floor. Mm-hmm. So it makes, so usually Côte du Rhône, I always think it's really appealing for customers for two reasons. The first one is the fact that, you know, it's a great price per quality ratio. That's really the thing. And the second advantage is the fact that, you know, it is always well made. It's very fruit forward. It doesn't have, it's always well balanced. So that's really, and when you compare it then with Rasto, Vaccarat, Gigaudas, Châteauneuf-du-Pape, Lirac, all these crus, the level of concentration in these wines is always a little bit higher because usually the orientation and the soil are not the same. And these wines are maybe a little bit more for people to maybe keep, even if I know that, you know, not many people owns a wine cellar. And for that reason, I know that, you know, we have been, you know, adapting also, you know, the winemaking process and the way that we're doing things in the vineyard, just to be able to have, you know, our customers, when they buy the wine, to be, they are able to age it, you know, 5-10 years easily. That's not really an issue. We recruit like Rasto, for example. And at the same time, they are able also, because we are going to age the wine, you know, in used oak barrels, French, that they'll be able to drink the wine right away.
How long, even your 17 bottle Le Decil Côte de Rhône Village, how long could you age that?
I would say that, of course, you know, the wine will still be, you know, really, really interesting to drink if you wait, for example, 7 to 8 years. Of course, the wine will not be the same because it's going to, you know, evolve. But what's really interesting with the Côte du Rhône region is the fact that, you know, if you want to have easy drinking type of wine, red wine in general, that you are able to drink on its own or even to pair with any kind of food, I would say, then you're on the right track. That's for sure. That's really what's really nice about, you know, Côte du Rhône region.
So let's talk about your Village Côte du Rhône here. Yeah, 50% Grenache, 50% Syrah. What I got on this was sort of a combination of ripe strawberry, sweet red fruit, some pepper, a little bit of media and floral. On the palate, the strawberry became a little more pronounced, a little more juicy. You know, the meaty notes, the pepper was all there. It was a soft wine. It was an easy wine with a good fruit finish. That was sort of my, when I tried it a little while ago, those were sort of my notes. I was wondering when you drink it, what you get.
I would say that all the qualities that you have just mentioned really comes from the two varietals that we use. So the Grenache, that's where you get, you know, the garrigue, herbal type of, you know, character or personality. And when you get to the Syrah, that's why you've got the color, you've got the structure. You have also, that's where you build the meat palette. And that's where it comes from, also the notes of strawberry or red berry. berries in general. And after, if you have kind of a coffee or mocha type of character, or maybe chocolate, it's because of the aging in barrels that really helps, you know, give roundness to the wine. And so all these qualities are, you know, really made with, you know, de Grenache, de Syrah, and the aging in barrels.
I feel, just because I've been drinking a lot more Côte de Rhône in the last couple months, I always had Tuscany and Chianti or Chianti Classico as my favorite area where I could get a really well-made wine with depth and character for that $15 to $20 sweet spot. And I think Côte de Rhône is another region that deserves to be on that same level. And for the consumer, that should be like another region where you can go and feel good, even if you're buying blind, that you've got a good chance of finding a wine with depth and character that you can put $20 down and you may get a dollar back in change.
I see that Chianti and, you know, Côte du Rhône region for me really are very similar, even if the varietals and the country is not the same, of course. But, you know, they are giving the same, you know, price to quality ratio and the quality wine, easy drinking that you can have, you know, during cocktail hour and that you can keep on drinking after on the barbecue, for example, during, you know, spring or summer easily. Yeah. As long as you keep it maybe a little bit, you know, in the fridge. Not very long, because I don't like, you know, we're always producing, you know, 14 to 14.5, even from time to time now with global warming, you know, and alcohol. And for that reason, when we get, you know, late spring or beginning of the summer, me, I like to, even for the red wine, to put my red wine, you know, just in the fridge for maybe half an hour. So this way you get the temperature down and it's more appealing.
I could not agree more. There is nothing more, well, no, not nothing, but it is so annoying when you order a glass of red wine and it's warm. The amount of times at restaurants, and I say it always really politely, I'm like, can you put this bottle or can you put this glass of wine? Can you put it in your fridge for a couple of minutes? I never understand how many places serve red wine far too warm.
That's true. That's one thing that we are always, you know, telling our customers in the restaurants, even in the hotels, that the wine should be around 13 degrees in temperature, just to make sure that they are not too cold, they are not too warm, because when they are too cold, after, you know, it kind of give you harsh tannins, you know, the mouthfeel is really harsh. And when they get too warm, what's happening is the fact that you only smell and feel the alcohol. That's it.
I think of it like Goldilocks and the Three Bears. You want the temperature just right. If it's too cold, you're right about the tannins. Also, you lose some of the nose. And if it's too warm, alcohol, and it gets a little flabby and it almost mutes some of the characteristics. You mentioned, Frederick, about global warming. How the producers in Southern Rhone, it is a warmer region. How nervous do people get there about global warming and what changes might have to happen to make sure the wines don't become 15.5% alcohol all the time?
I guess that because it's a slow process, we have been, the main effect that we have this day, for the last few years, are, I would say, there are two things really happening. The first one is that instead of starting, you know, picking fruit around September 15, we can start picking white varietals like Roussanne, for example, on August 15. So we are 1 month early.
Wow.
And the second thing is that, you know, we have had, like, today we are June 25th. We have had a good spring because it rained a few times and the temperature was quite cool, which for us is, I would say, normal, but it's a good thing because since the beginning of this week, it's more like around 30 degrees in temperature Celsius and the Mistral is blowing. So it's hot, and because of the fact that it's hot and the Mistral is blowing, then you lose a lot of moisture in the air, in the vineyard and on the vine. And we know that, you know, it will not affect, I would say, the vine for the next 30 to 45 days. But after that, we're going to start talking about, you know, drought. And if you have some deeper soils with clay and you have older vines, for example, of Grenache and Syrah, you'll be safe. What's really, really a concern to us now is that when we are going to renew our vineyards, because we have to do that, you know, once every 40 to 50 years, I would say, you know, in Côte d'Huron or Côte d'Huron village, you know, when a vine is 40 to 50 years old, it's maybe time to replace it. And so that's the more challenging part is when you are going to replace, you know, older vines by new vines. And these new vines, if they don't have enough water, then after they will not grow in a normal way. And that's one of our concerns.
Before I let you go, and yeah, it is June 25th, so things are, well, not in America. But I'm wondering how are you guys with coronavirus? How did it impact you in the winery and the vineyard, and just how is everything in Côte d'Huron right now?
Everything is starting to reopen now. Even the restaurants, I think it was June 22nd, so it's only, you know, 3 or 4 days ago that everything, I would say, came back to kind of normal. Mm-hmm. Even if when you go into a store, you have to wear a mask. When you enter, you know, any restaurant or anything, then, you know, you have to wash your hands, that kind of stuff. But since, you know, everything closed down on March 17th to fight, you know, COVID-19. But, you know, the vineyard kept on growing because it's a new season for the vineyard and for the vine. So we had the kind of a very normal 2 months, and nothing really happened except that business was pretty close to zero. So yeah. Because of the restaurants and the hotels were closed. And for that reason, that's where we realized that, you know, it was weird time, very, very special, you know, time. Fortunately, we will not, you know, live that again.
And we need
the vaccine.
Yes. Oh, yeah. And for restaurants, your wine would be perfect. I mean, at $17, the Buy the Glass program would be really good for it. But your family, friends, everyone is good and healthy and safe.
Yes, all the family and all the workers. We were very, you know, happy that nobody got sick and nobody got injured or anything like that. So, you know, we're going to start, I would say, summer in very healthy and happy to go back to maybe something normal.
Yeah, well, we're all hoping for that. So to everyone listening, let the seal go to the LCBO, Maison Lavaux, LAVAU, go to the LCBO and check out the wines that Frederick and his brother have produced. As I said, that Côte d'Huron at $17 is a killer value. Frederick, thank you so much for doing the podcast. Wish you nothing but success and safety and good health to you, your workers, and your family.
Thank you very much. It was really a pleasure talking to you, and I hope that everybody will enjoy Domaine La Décelle in the LCBO in Canada. And don't forget, if you travel to France, come to the Rhône and come and visit us.
I would love to. And yes, Décelle, I think I pronounced it 5 different ways in this interview. My French absolutely stinks. Hey, Frederick, thank you so much.
Thank you very much. And we keep in touch.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Hey, thanks everyone for listening to the Matt Talks Wine and Stuff with Interesting People podcast. Remember, you can find me on iTunes, on Spotify, on Stitcher, and wherever quality podcasts are sold.
Thanks for listening to the Matt Talks Wine and Stuff with Interesting People podcast. Happy hunting.